Heather, one of the Youth Services Librarians here at Crew Maine, and today I'm back with Eric, one of our Adult Services Librarians, and we have two super duper extra special guests today. We have Marta, who's our Youth Services Manager, and Grace, who is our Adult Services Manager. We decided to read yet another relic from our childhood teendom that was super popular for the sake of nostalgia. And this time we picked Animorphs, The Invasion by K.A. Applegate. So what did you guys remember about this book?
I'd somehow never read an Animorphs book. I feel like it was just a little past my time. But I feel like I remember my friends, like little brothers and sisters, kind of going crazy for these things. And they were definitely really big when I worked at Barnes & Noble when I was like toward the end of high school or like even the beginning of college, like in the late 90s, early 2000s. But I really didn't know anything about them.
I was a big fan back in my day. To the point where I actually owned the first 16 books in the series. But when I looked back for this podcast and realized there were 50 some books, I realized maybe I wasn't that.
Wow.
I didn't know there were 50 some. So I was pretty into at least the first 1 to 20, I would say. I enjoyed them quite a bit. And even just rereading it, it was like, whoa, like all these little nostalgia things keep popping up. Even just like the names of the characters was just exciting for me to see again. So I was a pretty big fan.
I had never read them either, but I definitely remember like being in my school library, my public library as a teen, tween age, and seeing the holographic covers, like the special edition covers, and thinking that those were super cool. But this was the first time that I delved into one myself.
Yeah, I think I read one of them when I was a kid. It was the one with the cat on the cover. And I knew Marta was going to be our resident expert, so I'm so glad she's here because she's a super fan. I had no idea what this book was going to be about. I felt like it might do a tie-in like to the Nickelodeon show Secret World of Alex Mack. So there was like maybe a chemical release that turned them into animals instead of turning them into goo. That was what I thought was going to happen.
And this was just like all in that vein.
I read too that at one time they had some Animorphs toys that were pretty much knockoffs of Transformers. There were like people that you just then, or figures that you then turned into the animals. I don't remember seeing those myself, which is unfortunate because I probably would have been pretty excited.
Those sound awesome. I would have totally wanted those too. Even though like I didn't really read Animorphs, like a lot of people around me did. I would have totally wanted those toys. Those sound fantastic.
I kind of still want them right now.
I know, right?
I bet they're on eBay for like hundreds of dollars a piece. Like, you know, Monkey Guy and Tiger Boy and like, you know, whatever girl. So it was kind of interesting to me that they could all transform into whatever they wanted to as long as they obtained the DNA. Maybe we should start talking about the book because this is like a lot of spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got to talk about the cover first. So I know we all had some different covers. Marta has her original cover. From 1996, what did you guys think of the cover?
Well, I like the original myself, although the holographic one is pretty cool. That one, I don't remember that one from when I was a kid. So I might like the originals just for the nostalgia factor. But it's funny, I was looking at the first few of the original covers that I have for the first few in the series. And book two, you can tell, was actually a lot better than book one. I felt like when I'm looking at the original book cover of the face of the little boy that turns into a lizard, it looks super computer animated. But then if you go to book two,
it's so bad.
I think it's the girl that turns into a cat. It's not quite as bad. Mm-hmm. They clearly upped the graphic design budget, I would say, for book two. But those would be the originals. I never got into the holographic ones.
I think the cover is what made me think, like Eric was saying, that it was going to be like a kid could turn into one specific animal. Like when I saw this cover, I was like, oh, this is going to be about a boy who can turn into a lizard. And that's it. So when people started turning into dogs and cats and stuff, I was a little thrown off.
I spent so much. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Eric. You're good.
I was just going to say, I spent so much time looking at this cover because it starts in the like lower left-hand corner of the picture of a little boy, and then it quickly becomes this computer-generated nonsense of like transitional phrases into a lizard, but I still can't tell if the picture of the little boy is an actual picture or if it's just slightly better computer-generated little boy. But it is definitely Uncanny Valley territory for a large part of like this transitional thing.
But like, who is that boy? Where is he now?
The later ones too. So I think it must have been the model. I would vote real boy. That's my guess.
Yes, I was super excited when my hold came in because yes, there are some libraries in our consortium who still have these books, and I'm so glad that they do because mine was the holographic cover, which I don't remember either. I was very mesmerized by it, and I think that's honestly why they still have the books in their libraries. I could totally see even modern kids picking that up and just being mesmerized by the image, much like me.
I feel like holographs are something that need to make a comeback, especially in book covers, because I don't see them ever anymore, and I miss them.
Yeah, agreed. Hard agree. All right. Are you guys ready for the synopsis of this book?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. So I got the synopsis from Goodreads, and it says, "Sometimes weird things happen to people. Ask Jake. He may tell you about the night he and his friends saw the strange light in the sky. He may even tell you about what happened when they realized the light was only a plane from another planet." Here's where Jake's story gets a little weird. It's where they're told that the human race is under attack and given the chance to fight back. Now Jake, Rachel, Cassie, Tobias, and Marco have the power to morph into any animal they choose. And they must use that power to outsmart an evil that is greater than anything the world has ever seen.
drama.
That's like way more accurate than some of the other synopses we read. Although that's from Goodreads, not the book itself.
Yeah, I'm so super with you there. I thought the synopsis was actually really true to the book too. So I do kind of wish I would have read it in advance instead of skipping over it like I always do, because it would have given me a good idea of where we were headed. So are you ready for the chapter breakdown?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this was quite a whirlwind of a book. So we are going to go chapter by chapter and break it down and let you know what's happening. So our main character is Jake. He tells us he has to keep his last name and location a secret because he can be caught, and he's writing this down to get the truth out to as many people as possible. Right now, he's waiting for the Andalites to come and save humanity. His life changed when he and his friends were hanging out at a mall one day. Marco is one of his buddies, and they know each other through sports. Jake is bummed he didn't make the team, but he and Marco are still really good friends. He and Tobias, a kid he ran into while at the mall, were first acquainted when he was getting bullied by some creeps who were giving him a swirly in the toilet. Why was this such a thing in the 90s, by the way? I feel like this used to be like on so many shows where like kids would get a swirly, and I do not ever remember this actually happening at school.
No, nor did I ever get one, so fortunate.
I hope it's something that was really just like more so made up for TV than like actually happened to anybody in real life.
But if it has happened to someone, I apologize.
Yeah.
Fun.
It sounds sure. Terrible.
Jake says Tobias is a strange guy. They also run into Rachel and Cassie. Jake describes Rachel as kind of pretty, but then says not really because she's his cousin. What is with the family member thing? We are 3 for 3 in our book choices for Nostalgia Podcast, where there's a weird family dynamic where one of the family members thinks the other is attractive.
I think it's a talent you have for choosing books.
It's a true gift.
I'd put it back on the author. I felt like she was trying to quickly get across that Rachel's like the pretty one or something. And it's like, let's have her cousin pointed out. And get through this introductory information or something.
You know, that's so true, because unlike some of the other books we've read, this had no V.C. Andrews vibes in it at all. There was nothing weird about this book. So he describes Cassie as the complete opposite of Rachel, much more peaceful and mysterious. Jake admits he has a crush on Cassie, which is super adorable. So yeah, that was a lot of information in just a couple of pages. So there is a very big info dump, like right at the beginning. It does, well, the pace keeps up, but there's not as much information being like launched at you throughout the book. It's just, she wants to set the scene. She wants to set the stage. And oh, we're still in chapter one. So Jake implies that Rachel and Cassie shouldn't go to the construction site because they're girls and all. And Rachel shuts that down. However, Cassie said she is a little afraid and would like the boys to come. The kids cut through the construction site and it is creepy. Tobias is gazing up at the sky and notices a light. It's a flying saucer. I thought this was a really great start, honestly. I feel like it would engage like reluctant readers. And we had a pop culture alert. Rachel said to think of herself as like Storm from the X-Men instead of what her looks would imply, Little Miss Teen Model.
Yeah, we talked about this in our video, but the empty construction site is another trope that was like so prevalent in the 80s and 90s, and I have never once seen one. Like, kids playing in construction sites was a thing in after school specials and like G.I. Joe PSAs and all that.
Yeah, fortunately I missed out on construction site play and swirlies.
I know.
Both things.
No, I feel like we just didn't have a true like experience of the 90s.
No, apparently not.
Just through the media.
They warned us well, apparently.
Yes, we just avoided things.
Yep.
All right, so chapter two, not as info dumpy. I don't think, I feel like we might have still had a little bit of info dump, but let's see. So the flying saucer is about the size of a school bus and lands in front of them. It's described as cute, except for a tail-like thing that they're pretty sure is a weapon. And then another dated reference, old tech alert. One of the kids asked if they should run home to get a camera because UFO photos are big money. Yes, kids, we didn't have cell phones and cameras on us at all times. So it was a different time. You actually had to go out of your way to like get a camera.
And you couldn't necessarily see what the picture was going to look like before you took it. I feel like when I was a kid, digital cameras weren't even really prevalent yet.
Yeah.
Through the little viewfinder and hope for the best.
So much more mystery back then. You don't know if you caught the UFO or not.
You had to actually take the film to a whole place and have it developed and wait like at least an hour, but usually 24 hours or something.
Yeah. So much more patience was required.
And then half the photos were terrible that you paid already.
Yeah. Your thumb was in them. It was fine. It's all good. So one of the things I thought was cool was the aliens are able to communicate with the kids via telepathy. And they look like a person and a deer put together with a tail like a scorpion. So that is quite the mental image in my brain.
Yeah. And like, didn't the antlers, I think, had eye stalks?
That sounds right.
Yeah, with extra eyes on top of it. So I think they had eyes in their main face and then eyes at the end of the stalks.
It totally reminded me of like a little kid drawing what they thought an alien looked like. Like, and then it had antlers and then it had this. When Jake speaks to the alien, he has tears in his eyes. He said he couldn't describe how he felt other than feeling like he had known this being forever and hadn't seen him in a long, long time. The alien is wounded and dying. He says he's not the first to come to Earth and the others are not like him as they want to destroy you. I thought it was super interesting, just like in the text, when the alien is speaking, the author uses symbols instead of quotations to represent that they're connecting thoughts. So they're speaking through telepathy instead of verbally. I just really thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. I mean, if they hadn't too, it would have been probably so hard to to see or to understand, I guess, that it was telepathy. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
I listened to the audiobook actually through Hoopla, so I did not know about the punctuation choices. That's really cool.
I didn't know we had that on Hoopla. That's really exciting
for
me.
We sure do. Oh,
that's awesome. Nice little plug too. I like that.
I wonder
if so we had a couple.
Do you have any of the other ones?
Oh, I don't know. Now I kind of want to look and see if we've got any, like, Christopher Piker, Fear Street, R.L. Stein, like, in the inner Hoopla. It's a good question. So there were a couple of pop culture references in this chapter. Phasers are only on Star Trek when someone suggests that aliens in the flying saucer might zap them if they try to run. And then when discussing that they should tell someone about what they saw, we'd get to be on Letterman for sure. And I'm pretty sure Letterman is on the air anymore, even though he was for years and years.
Correct. Yeah, right. I caught that too. I guess they could just put like Jimmy Fallon in there or something in place of that one.
Yeah, good old Jimmy Fallon.
Or just late night host, I suppose. They could have just done that and then it could have stood the test of time a bit more.
Yeah, so if you like to... It will go viral for sure.
There you go.
Yes. And I think we'll probably talk about this at the end, but these are being adapted into graphic novels. So I'm really curious to see how they do translate like this kind of stuff into a graphic novel format.
Oh, yeah.
We got to check out this alien landing on the TikTok.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 3. The destructive aliens are called Yerks. I think that's how you say it. So that's how I'm going to say it.
That's how I say it, yeah.
Yeah. They are different from humans and the other aliens. Andalites? Were you calling them Andalites?
I was calling them Andalites and Yerks, but it looked like he just wanted to, just wanted to name them Jerks. But then was like, okay, in some languages, you pronounce the J as a Y, and I'll add an extra E.
I totally didn't pick up on that. I love that. The alien can also project pictures into the kids' minds, and the kids can also physically feel his feelings. He shows them a picture of a yerk or a jerk and says they are parasitic and need a host to survive. There are already hundreds on Earth, and they are known as controllers because they take over the host. There is a battle and the Andalites tried to take out the Yerks. But I don't know why I have such a hard time saying that. The Yerks.
It's awkward. It's so known easy to say in your head, but it's hard to say out loud.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird sounds. And I think I keep wanting to say yeet, like the kids say yeet.
Yeah. We gotta yeet the Yerks out of here.
Yes. So the Yerks won the battle. The Andalite said the Yerks will remove all traces of him, but the kids must tell this story. He urges the kids to climb aboard the ship and get a little blue box. And as Jake goes to retrieve the box, he also sees a photo of an Andalite family and it makes him super sad. The Andalite offers to give the kids a special power to morph into any animal. What? An animorph, perhaps? They've never given this power away to anyone before. All they had to do is touch a creature to get its DNA pattern, and they'll be able to become that creature. But they can't sit still and like think about this for long because the Yerks are coming.
It's a monster book is what it is.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have noped right out of there. Don't need me like giant legless cockroaches or centipedes. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So chapter 5, the Hork Bajir is looking around, pistol in hand, to see if they're alone. The Andalite tells the kids to stay quiet as he has impeccable hearing, but not great eyesight. The kids are terrified, but the Andalite tells them, courage, my friends. And they immediately begin to feel better. Visser 3 comes off the ship and the kids find out he's an Andalite controller. Yikes. Yeager has only been able to overtake an Andalite once, and that Andalite is Visser 3. They begin to hear Visser III's thoughts and are worried he can hear theirs too. But the Andalite explains he can only hear their thoughts if they direct their energy to him. They find out the wounded Andalite is Prince Alphanagor, Serenilia, Shamtul. I don't think those are words.
I think the cat, her cat walked across the key.
Yeah. Or across the typewriter. Like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Visser III explains he wants to take over the earth and humans because humans have no idea what's going on. So they can invade them easily, and then they'll take over the entire universe. The Andalite was able to get a hit on Visser III, causing a gash in his shoulder. The kids discover the reason they wanted to overtake an Andalite is their ability to morph into animals, and Visser III becomes a monstrous creature. I actually feel like that's a pretty legit reason to like want to take them over, because that is a pretty cool power. And if you're like evil and power hungry, why wouldn't you want that ability?
Exactly. Yeah. The best.
All right. Chapter 6. The Andalite tells Jake to calm down, as do his friends, and they watch the monster devour the Andalite. The last thing they heard from him was a cry of pain that will live in their heads forever, which just made me feel really sad.
It's kind of gross too. I didn't remember it being so gross.
Also that. We were just a different stock in the 90s. So there are human controllers over by the bug fighters too, and they're all laughing together. Jake feels like one of the voices is really familiar, but he can't place it. This will come up again later. Marcos begins to throw up from the carnage, which is what I would do too. And then that's when the Yeekers notice them. So the group tries to outrun them.
Doesn't he say something like, just take the head so we can see who it is?
Yeah. Another rather gross moment.
Yeah.
I mean,
And like that poor homeless guy is just trying to, you know, not die in the elements at night, and then he's murdered by aliens.
Yep. And beheaded, probably.
Yeah.
He's
trying to live his life. Super not cool, Jake. Not cool.
And like, not another thought for him the whole book.
Oh, that's right? A great point. You're right. He's gone.
Tragic. Chapter 7. Jake makes it home safely. He goes to sleep and has lots of nightmares, as he should. And in the morning, he's woken up by his mom calling for him, telling him Tobias is there. Tobias excitedly tells Jake he was able to morph into his cat, Dude, by petting him, thinking about the events that transpired, and concentrating on changing. Jake doesn't want to accept this happened and would like to brush Tobias off as being out of his mind, direct quote. But Tobias recalls the whole story too, and he's going to prove it by morphing into a cat right in front of Jake's eyes. I really love that his cat's name is Dude.
Yeah, I'm putting that on my list of future pet names.
I like it.
Such a 90s like name, too, 80s and 90s. I love that.
I think it was this chapter where Jake talks about Tobias's family. He's like, he has the most screwed up family ever. And it really is like depressing that his mom, I don't remember what happened to his dad, but his mom just gives him up to his uncle. And then his aunt and uncle, I guess, are divorced and just send him back and forth. Or maybe it's his, maybe they're siblings and I misread that. But they just kind of like send him back and forth from coast to coast.
Yeah,
that too. I actually remember exactly what you're talking about when I read that line that, yep, he had the most screwed up family. Like, it was another moment where I was like, the author is just like telling you like it is, like just getting it right out there.
Yeah,
for sugar.
Yeah, moving yeah. along.
No, she's got to get through that to the action.
Yeah.
Yes, children, it's a cruel place. You're going to get eaten by aliens. Families aren't what they're cracked up to be. So a solid lesson there. But yeah, she just gets right down to business.
You know, and it's so funny to me because like for a lot of this, I thought like, yes, it would be shelved in juvenile fiction. But then there's like stuff like that happens. And it's like, you know, it does kind of seem like parts of it are a teen book, but it also seems like it's kind of aimed at like second, third and fourth graders. So it's just like this weird like headspace kind of thing. And maybe that's why she kind of like zoomed through these details. Like, yes, this is here. But this is not my target demographic we're shooting for. We're just getting to the action and the morphing. So I don't know. I don't know. Chapter 8, Jake still doesn't want to believe this, but then Tobias begins talking to him telepathically in his cat form. Jake tried to think something at Tobias, but Tobias didn't hear it. Tobias thinks you may need to be morphed in order to send thoughts. Tobias begins to exhibit cat-like behavior, and the boys realize it's like two animals being melded into one. He thinks like a human, but has the instincts of a cat. Which, that just makes me think of Dwight Schrute from The Office for some reason. I don't know. Tobias says they need Jake too, as Jake is a natural leader, so he really wants him to take on this responsibility. In response, Jake goes to find Homer, his dog, to try his own transformation, as he knows Tobias is right, and he does have that natural leadership quality. And because the cat's name is Dude, I almost wonder if Homer is a reference to Homer Simpson. I just had that thought.
That's
that would make sense.
I loved the part when he was the dog because it just reminded me of my own dog who freaks out if anybody's even on the sidewalk across the street.
Same. I laughed so hard. And has that bark
for no reason. If the mail comes when we're recording this, you will definitely hear it even downstairs. And it's crazy. But I just imagine like this is probably what my dog thinks. Intruder, intruder, go away.
Chapter 10, he ended up calling the others to let them know what happened. And when he saw Tom again after he morphed back, he felt really weird around him. We find out Tom is part of a club called The Sharing, where they all do stuff together. And I kept thinking with this too, like, I feel like the cult thing was kind of a 90s classic as well. And I was thinking back to an episode of Boy Meets World where Sean joins a cult. Did any of you guys see that one?
No,
that sounds like, I was not a big Boy Meets World watch so far out of left field from what I know about that show.
I loved that show. It was one of my favorites.
I didn't see that episode, but I don't remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very similar. And I'm trying to think of like what the cult's name was, but I feel like that also used to like come up quite a bit in the 90s too, just like random cults. So
Satanic Panic tie-in.
Makes sense to me. So he also doesn't want to tell Tom his huge secret, even though he would have in the past. He tells Tom he didn't make the team and Tom doesn't care. In fact, he quit the team last week, citing there are more important things than throwing balls into hoops. So the gang meets up at Cassie's barn. We discover Cassie's family has a wildlife rehabilitation center on their property. Convenient. I bet that's going to come in handy.
Yeah.
Cassie shows them an article in the paper about last night's events. Flying saucer sightings were reported, but they said it was actually just kids playing with fireworks and completely dismissed the flying saucers as nonsense. And also just like, whatever, it was just some kids and some fireworks, like it's fine.
Yeah, it was a weather balloon.
Yeah. It's the 90s. The kids realize at this point that the cops are also controllers and wonder who else in society has been turned into a controller. And we find out Marco's mom passed away by drowning and his dad is washed in grief. He has a hard time functioning and Marco does not at all want to participate in this morphing thing as anything happening to him will literally kill his dad. So another like really sad backstory.
It's like so dark for reasons we can't explain.
And another, I feel like it was just kind of briefly touched on too, like where it's just like, okay, and then there's this thing. And then we're moving back because Cassie has morphed into a horse and is running around the farm. As she morphs back, they hear the sound of tires crunching on gravel and look up to see the cops. Uh-oh. Chapter 11. Jake tells Cassie to morph now because the police car is coming fast. Cassie decides to morph back to human form just in time. The cop questions the kids and Jake can tell he's a controller. He even mentions Tom as he looks like Jake and tells him he knows him from The Sharing and that Jake should come sometime too. The policeman leaves and the gang tries to decide if they should tell someone about the morphing ability. they can't come to a consensus, so they head over to Jake's to play a video game. And I wonder, was this where you caught? Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like this might have been the Sega Genesis part. So Tom ends up joining in, wanting to play too, and asks the gang if they heard about what went down at the construction site last night. Tom says only Dips would believe in aliens and flying saucers, and encourages Marco and Jake to join the sharing again. Marco realizes Jake is a controller too. Or not Jake. Marco realizes Tom is a controller.
Such a bummer.
Yeah.
I also just really like the term Dips. I hadn't heard that in years and years.
Can we talk for 1 second about how, like, there's this open group called The Sharing that is just like this all ages group in the town, and nobody thinks that's weird or like a weird name for a group?
Yeah, didn't raise any red flags for anybody.
For like anyone who wasn't in this group, like, hey, mom and dad, I'm going to The Sharing with the, all these adults. Like, I'm a teenage boy. I'm just like, what is this?
It sounds a lot like a cult.
Yeah.
But it's fine, whatever.
Volleyball.
Just don't play in the construction site. All right, so chapter 12. Jake wants to punch Marco about what he said about Tom, even though he is also kind of thinking Marco is right. They agree not to talk about it anymore. And suddenly they hear a bird tapping on the window. It's Tobias, the red-tailed hawk. Tobias revealed he stayed a little longer with the Andalite, and the Andalite gave him visions of Yerk pools. They have to leave their host every 3 days to go and recharge their nutrients. The nutrients come by way of a Candrona. It mimics the Yerk's home sun, and the particles keep them nourished. Tobias decides whether the group should help or not, and he's going to do the thing. He also says, another pop culture alert, being a hawk is the equivalent of Superman. All right, chapter 13. Tobias's plan is when they find the Yerk pool, they blow it up and kill all the slugs inside. Seems great solid. Plan.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, that's probably the most realistic thing in here is that that's exactly what a kid that age would do. Not to that age, but I'd imagine, like, you just blow it up. That's what you do. You were just going to go in and blow it up. I don't know how we're going to get the explosives for this, but this is the best idea.
Yeah, he's watched a lot of, like, Stallone and Schwarzenegger movies. He knows that's how you handle all your problems. Just
obviously.
Yep.
Decision-making parts of the brain are not fully developed yet.
Yes.
We're just
going
to go for this option. We'll see what happens.
It'll be fine. What could go wrong? Jake is starting to get on board now, but Marco asks if he's really capable of killing his brother, which he'd have to do. So that just got real dark again. He reminds Jake he has had a pretty easy life, unlike his and Tobias's, and he doesn't know how hard it is in the real world when you have to make those kind of decisions. Marco still does not want to join the fight. Jake said that Andalite gave the morphing powers to them for a reason, so he's going to do it. He wants to infiltrate the sharing meeting that night. They go, and it ends up just being a fun party where people are hanging out, having food, etc. Tom explains that there are different ranks when joining, and for a split second, his face morphs into his actual face. Jake takes it as his actual brother was trying to warn him that it was a slug, not him talking. And as a full member, he goes off to a separate meeting. I keep getting like Scientology vibes with this cult as well. So I have thoughts. chapter 14, Jake decides he's going to morph into a dog and spy on the full member meeting. Tobias doesn't want to change out of his hawk form, but the others are able to convince him. Jake discovers his assistant principal, Mr. Chapman, is a controller, and the reason Tom brought Jake to the meeting is because he suspects he was the one who witnessed things at the construction site. He says they can either make him ours or kill him.
Super dark.
Taking turns. I really don't remember, like, being a kid, like, in the 90s and reading stuff, and it being this violent, but it totally was, because I used to read Fear Street and stuff too, so, but it's like shocking to me.
Yeah, I love how they made the principal or the vice principal in on it too, because that is also such, like, a little kid book your principal you already don't like or are afraid of just because of that authority figure. And then like here they're just buying in like, yeah, he's a bad guy for sure.
Yep.
So chapter 15, Jake thinks being a dog in that instance is what saved him. He chose not to think and to just sniff around on the beach for a while. Cassie is caught by the policeman. She gets out of it by saying she was simply searching for shells on the beach, and he sends her on her way. Jake catches up to her in dog form, then morphs back and shares what he learned with the rest of the group. Jake asks Cassie which small creatures she has, as he wanted to keep an eye on Chapman. So they go to try to find some lizards.
Logical choice.
Does anyone know? I can't remember where. Do they give a setting, the state that this takes place in? Because it's got to be somewhere where there's lizards. Because I thought of it as like traditional Midwestern town until they said they were just going to go find lizards in the backyard.
I wondered about that too.
Yeah.
I had the same thoughts myself, and because of the lizards, I feel it has to be like in the South somewhere, but I was thinking Midwest the whole time as well.
It's a very like nondescript town because there's a beach apparently, but also lizards like in the same little, seemingly little town. So it's like an interesting geographical conundrum.
It's the story, I guess. Fits the story.
Yeah. I did like in the beginning or maybe it was on the book cover or something, the character Jake says, it could even be your town. So it's supposed to be like anywhere USA.
That makes sense.
Oh yeah, and at the beginning too, he said he couldn't disclose his location or his last name, which is why we don't know exactly where it is.
Good call.
We got this, you guys. At chapter 16, Jake becomes a lizard for the first time at school. On his way to Chapman's office, he picks up a spider scent and chases after it. His animal instincts take over and he eats it. And then someone steps on his tail and he can't move. Who could it be? Chapter 17, OMG. So his tail came off of his body and it was Chapman who stepped on him because of course it was. Why would it offend anybody else? He followed him into a janitor's closet. Chapman pulled on a hook. And he heard a voice screaming as a yerk slithered into it. The pool was under his school the whole time. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, they just like thought of it off the top of their head. Like, boom, Animorphs, done. Problem solved. So they decide to head to the gardens to get more morphs, which it's like a zoo. It seems like a zoo.
They don't actually tell you what the gardens is until they're there, which I thought was really funny. I'm like, what is the gardens? It's capitalized. It seems weird. You're going to a place and then it's like, oh, okay, it's a zoo.
Yeah. Are they going to become a mouse or a bumblebee? chapter 19, when they arrived, Tobias said he only wants to be able to turn into a hawk. And Rachel tells him she thinks it's a mistake and they should acquire as many morphs as possible. Cassie leads everyone to the back of the exhibits where the trainers and whatnot go. And their first stop is a gorilla. Marco will acquire those powers. Eventually a security guard spots them and the group splits off and runs. Marco and Jake steal a golf cart. And as they drive, they end up running out of room and having to enter exhibits. They pick one with tall trees, birds, and a super high wall. And they're wondering why guards aren't chasing them anymore.
Yeah.
So as they head toward a ladder, they find out they are in a tiger's habitat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Easy to sneak into those habitats there.
Right? You can just walk right in after driving your golf cart, like, over there. It's totally fine.
Yeah. There it is. I definitely had, like, Harambe flashbacks during this whole thing. R.I.P. Yes. Harambe.
Yeah. I forgot about Harambe. There was a pop culture alert in this chapter, too. Marco jokes with the gorilla that he loved his work in King Kong versus Godzilla. I also like that he was telling jokes to a gorilla. So chapter 20, Jake acquires the Siberian tiger, but they don't realize there's another tiger in the cage until it leaps at them. They're somehow able to flee to safety, outrun the guards, and meet up with the rest of the group who hadn't been chased at all and just acquired more morphs along the way.
I also like how nobody believed them. They're like, no, for real. I was in a tiger enclosure. And they're like, okay.
Me too.
Yeah.
There was a reference to Tarzan while they were in the Siberian tiger habitat as well. There's a lot of like pop culture tie-ins in such a short little book. It's very fun. All right, chapter 21. Jake makes it home and asks his brother if he wants to shoot hoops. He says no, that he has other plans. Jake meets up with the gang and they discover Cassie is missing and Tobias is already in a bird morph. They head to the school and they find Cassie, who's being yanked down the hallway by a controller. It's not gonna end well.
No.
Mm-hmm. So chapter 22, they enter the secret passageway and find a huge cavern that takes up half the town. There are yurks everywhere and lots of humans, most of whom are screaming. This sounds terrible. All right, chapter 23, they find Tom and Cassie and are relieved to hear that Tom isn't one of the voluntary controllers. He's screaming just as loudly as everybody else. As they go to rescue Cassie, two creatures stop them and Rachel starts to morph. So I feel like this is when it starts getting really intense too. Not that like the rest of the book hasn't been intense, but it starts getting really intense.
Yeah, they do, or she did a good job here at the end, like having like a full-on action climax. It's like they finally face off with some of the yurks and the creatures and stuff.
It was pretty exciting and action-packed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so chapter 24, Rachel morphs into an elephant and stomps out a lot of the aliens. By the chapter's end, Jave has morphed into a tiger. Chapter 25, Jake gets into a fight with a hork bajir. Marco transforms into a gorilla. Tobias swoops down and is able to distract an alien so Cassie can run. She morphs and tells the humans to follow. Jake meets up with Visser 3, who begins to morph into a creature unlike any other. And there's another reference to King Kong and Godzilla as Marco morphs into a gorilla.
Hmm.
Terrifying. Chapter 26. So he becomes an eight-headed monster that has the ability to shoot fireballs. Tom is one of the humans they were able to free, but he's attacked.
Yeah, that was wild.
Falls down,
it was
the
like,
stairs.
Didn't he have like spider like a bunch of legs and also eight heads? It was like a spider, like an eight-headed spider that breathes fire.
Yeah,
it was a kid's drawing of a monster. I kind of wonder, like, if she had kids in her life who, like, drew her pictures. Like, what do you think this would look like? And they drew it, and then she wrote it. I'm going to pretend like that's what she did. I like that.
Yeah.
Jake attacks in his tiger form, and they continue running upstairs. Jake was badly burned by a fireball here. So not looking good. And then chapter 27, Visser 3 couldn't follow them all the way upstairs because of his size. Tom survived, but was captured by a controller and ended up home later that night. Tobias had to stay in his morph for too long and is permanently a bird. And the book ends on a hopeful note, knowing the Andalites will return.
Wow.
What a journey.
What a roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster. A lot goes book. I definitely think those reluctant readers would like it because she does a good job of just, I feel like each chapter ends with a cliffhanger, the book ends kind of with a cliffhanger. She reels them in pretty well.
Yeah,
I totally am with you. I can definitely see modern kid readers reading this, which is why I'm so excited that they are being turned into graphic novels right now. Like, these will make great graphic novels, I think.
Yeah.
I'm so curious to see how they circulate, but I feel like it's going to be pretty awesome.
This would make like also an awesome anime style TV show or something if they ever wanted to do that.
Yeah, they did a live action TV show a long time ago. But you're right. I think like an actual cartoon one would be neat, especially with those graphic novels, because as I read, I keep wanting to see what these creatures look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I totally agree. So did you think this was worth rereading, or if you read it for the first time, did you think it was worth it?
I'd say yes for the nostalgia factor. I feel like at this point in my life, I didn't glean a whole lot of additional insight. But I mean, yeah, for the nostalgia factor, it was exciting for me to be like, oh, this character, that character that I'd completely forgotten about. But I would definitely like to read the graphic novels for the reasons you mentioned. So for them, yeah, it's a fun one if you really enjoyed it back in the day.
Yeah, I'm glad that I read one to know like what the hype was about. Now I can say that like I read an Animorphs book. Like Marta said, I don't think it's necessarily something that I would seek out at this point to read more of it if it weren't for this podcast, but I'm glad I've experienced it. And I think for modern kids, it would definitely be worth reading. It was fun. It was a fun read.
Yep.
Fun, easy, quick read.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with both of those things. I enjoyed it, but I think like I might spend a couple hours listening to an audiobook on a car trip or like my commute to work or something if they're on Hoopla. But I don't know that I would necessarily read any more of the physical books. Because I don't have that nostalgic kind of tie to it, except in the general sense that a lot of this is like pretty dated and specific tropey things that happened a lot in our childhoods. Mm-hmm. But I think I would read the graphic novels.
I thought this was like a really interesting book. There were some like surprisingly really deep parts to it as well. Like just the alien, it almost seemed to represent like unconditional love, which I thought was like really cool. I really liked the description of the Andalites. So I think I would read more just for the Andalites' return.
Yeah.
Because I want to see them fight these guys. So would you recommend them to other 80s and 90s kids to check out?
I think I would recommend them to other 80s and 90s kids who have kids to mm-hmm. check out. Like, I think this would be a fun one. For the parent to have the nostalgia factor and to read or listen to with a kid who's maybe experiencing it for the first time and can enjoy it just on the level of the content of the book.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think like if I had kids and they were of an age where I think they would enjoy it, like this would be great to like sit down and read with my kid. Like my 10, 12, 14, whatever year old kid, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that if it's not something you were into as a kid, I don't know how much appeal there would be for like a 30, 40 something year old person just to read, you know, fresh out without any background in it.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned like parents who read this, reading it with their kids, because that's like literally exactly what I wrote in my notes. Like this would be so fun for a parent who was into that series to read alongside their kid. Mm-hmm. Just because I do feel like it does still have a lot of kid appeal. And I don't think an 80s or 90s parent would pick it up on their own. But if they have a kid, I could totally see them reading this together. All right, so ratings 1 to 5, I have a couple of categories for you. So on a scale of 1 to 5, what did you think of the characters?
Oh, I'd say 3. They're kind of down the middle for me. Like mm-hmm. she tries to give them some background with their family life and whatnot, but they're not totally fleshed out really.
I think I'd say about the same.
Yeah, I would give it like a 3.5 to 4 because I did think it was interesting that at least 2 of the characters had an interesting background, even if it was kind of glossed over. It almost made me think like when Tobias was trapped in animal form at the end, I was like, I don't know whether to be happy or sad for him because his life might be legitimately better. Like he might be happy now.
So yeah, I gave it
interesting things there.
Yeah, I gave it about a 3.5 to 4 as well. Like, I wish they would have been fleshed out a little bit more, but I think because it is like a juvenile book and it's not teen, even though some of it reads teen, I really do think the target audience is kids. So I do understand, but I really wanted more of that backstory. All right, plot, scale of 1 to 5.
I guess I'm going down the middle with 3 again. It's a tough one.
I think I'd maybe give it about a 4. Like, it was, I mean, certainly, like, if you were looking for plot holes or wanting, like, an ironclad, this is not for you, but for, I guess, for just something fun and fast-paced that has an interesting plot to move you along, I thought it was pretty decent, yeah.
Yeah, I would give it a 4 as well. I think it really kind of machine guns through a lot of plot in about 185, I think, pages. And I'm a sucker for like this body snatcher kind of like clony type of thing that they have going on with the evil people. And also shape changing is awesome. So I enjoyed a lot of the story.
Yeah, I gave it a 4 as well, just because it made me think back to the New Year's party that we read last time and where it was just like plot point, plot point, plot point. So it, I think it would keep readers engaged, which is why I'm going for a 4. Like, there wasn't any slow parts or anything to it. It was just like boom, 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 action.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Dated pop culture references, scale of 1 to 5.
It wasn't bad, I thought. I mean, there were some obvious ones, but...
Yeah, a lot of the pop culture references, I feel like Superman, King Kong, Godzilla are kind of timeless. I don't think there were too many that were horribly dated.
Yeah, I think all of that stuff is, they're still making Godzilla movies, it seems like, every other year.
Right.
Superman, the same thing. Yeah, I think it was kind of timely, even if like the tech was definitely outdated and I would give a worse grade to, but it wasn't like a critical part of the story or anything.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it a 3 because I didn't like, I didn't think any of the pop culture references were too like out of place. And I liked that they were constantly being compared to like superheroes and stuff, because I think it just gives kids another like good frame of reference as well. Like, she's like Storm from X-Men. Like, oh, I know who that is. And the most important factor, the nostalgia scale, 1 to 5. Did you feel like you were transported back to the 90s?
Oh, 4.5 to 5 for me. Yes. What's funny is it didn't remind me of like a whole lot of other things going on in my life at the time. So it didn't translate that way, but it was exciting just because of the familiarity that I'd completely forgotten about.
I don't think I experienced like a major nostalgia factor, but I didn't read them as a kid. So I think that's probably why.
Same. I would give it like a 3, I think, because I also didn't read these as a kid, but I was still like reading it and thinking, God, that was such a weird trope, like the construction site thing, or I forget what else. There were a couple more things that I thought of when I was reading it where I was like, that is not, I don't think, prevalent anymore, but it was such a thing back in the day. But I also, you know, like I said, I haven't read these before, so there was nothing for me to really go back to.
I'm with you, Marta. I gave it a 4 just because, like, not only was it reminding me of Animorphs, but it was reminding me of Alex Mack and Boy Meets World and arcades and Sega Genesis and just all kinds of things. So I gave it a 4 for that one. And then just your final overall rating, what would you rate this book, like if you're going to put on Goodreads?
For me as an adult, unfortunately closer to like 3. For kids though, who I think would be targeted, closer to a 4 just because of that excitement factor. I think that a lot of kids would really love it, especially those that aren't readers.
Yeah, I think I'd give it a 3 as well.
Yeah, I would give it 2 separate ratings. I think personally a 3 to maybe a 3.5, because I did enjoy it, but I didn't connect with it, even though I liked the themes and stuff. But I do think kids would probably really like it, especially, like Marta said, reluctant readers, because it is just action-packed. I don't think there's a single chapter that goes by that's just like exposition or like setting up for something. I think something happens every single chapter, and they're all like 5 or 10 pages long, so it's like easily digestible tiny little chunks that have a lot of things going on.
Here's a like I would say that it'd probably be like a step before Percy Jackson because of that action. Mm-hmm. Like, so if kids that you would recommend Percy Jackson to, the little, if they're just a smidge younger than that age group, I'd say they'd probably like this one.
Yeah, I totally agree. I ended up rating this a 3.5 just personally, but I rounded up to a 4 just because, like you were saying too, I think young readers would really, really enjoy this one. And normally I round down because I'm just a really harsh rater. But but I my overall rating for this one was 3.5 because it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I wasn't the target audience, but I can definitely think of some kids who would really, really like the series. Is there anything else you would like to share?
Oh, this was fun.
Yeah. For organizing this, Heather, this was something that I would not have ever read. So I'm glad that it like did my reading horizons a little bit.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you guys could join us. This was so much fun. All right, so that wraps up this month's podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. See you next time.